Welcome, everybody, to the Bottom Line Studio, Rego Business School podcast. In the studio, we have today Paula Elksner.
Hi, everyone. And, hi, David.
Hello. And we will talk about work and education in Latvia and America. With that being said, let's start off by asking you to describe yourself in a few sentences.
I don't know if everyone says that, but I think that's like the hardest question. It's a little bit like a job interview type of a thing. But I thought about that a little bit, and the funny thing is that I went to my LinkedIn account because I remembered that some time ago, in some workshop, we created a description about ourselves that we were asked to put on LinkedIn. And I found it, and I thought, oh my God, it's pretty accurate. So I'll try to remember it. So I think that I connect easily with people because I'm very open-minded. I like to get to know new ideas and to share them with other people afterwards. I have a lot of energy and I like to use it in starting new projects and moving new ideas further. And yeah, I think I always say that my kind of secret superpower is that I get things done. If something needs to be done, I'll do it. So that sounds a little dangerous, but I didn't mean it that way.
By the way, like when you came up with this description, was it like in a conference? How would you recommend somebody else who maybe has never done it before, let's say a bachelor's student, like they're preparing for an interview? How would you like come up with that?
Yeah, it's a good question. And actually, one more thing that was there was my values. And I think that's important. That's actually a good place where to start. Because my description also said that in my workplace, I want to foster openness, honesty, and reaching for big goals. So I think that's actually a really cool place to start, to think, what are your values? And that's kind of a hard question to ask sometimes, I think, because it's a big concept. But if you can kind of figure that out, I think that's a good place. And today, actually, I was doing a workshop for high schoolers, and we talked a little bit about how to understand what your dreams are. And that's also a big question. And one idea that I like myself is to, firstly, figure out what you want to do. But it's always a good idea to do things that you are good at. Mm. And how to figure out what you are good at? Ask others. Or pay attention to what other people ask you to do. So that indicates that you are better than them because they are asking you. You know, in a school context, if someone asks you help in the maths homework, in the work context, if someone asks you for a tip for a specific system, how to use it, or getting a project done. So I think that's something that I have used myself. And it's always nice to hear good things about yourself. So it's a cool idea to ask others what you're good at.
Good way to receive compliments.
Yeah, but it's also a very good way how to reflect, because sometimes we don't see these things ourselves because it seems so natural. But for others, that's something, you know, cool and interesting.
Awesome. And could you elaborate, what are you currently doing in your career?
Yeah, I can try. So I came back from the US where I spent 1 year, not even 2 months ago, a little bit less than 2 months ago. And I rejoined RBS. I worked in RBS before as well. And now I'm leading initiative, which is called Education Innovation Lab. And my role is, you know, as a project manager, project leader, you do everything, as you might know, from more strategic things, coming up with a vision, mission, thinking how this will look in the future, managing a lot of stakeholders, also managing a small team, and working together with MIT. That's a very interesting aspect. Education Innovation Lab currently, its main partner is MIT. So I have a wonderful chance to continue to build on these connections that I made in the US and try to reach out to other universities in Latvia, because important point is that Education Innovation Lab, it's based in RBS, but everything we do for other universities in Latvia. We want to bring new ideas to Latvia and show how they can be implemented in Latvia.
By the way, for some of the people who may not know what that is yet, could you maybe give like a description and for what kind of people is it meant for?
Yeah, sure. Education Innovation Lab, currently, we work with higher education managers and administrators from universities in Latvia. So it's not for students, it's for people who work in education and mainly who work in administrative and managerial roles. So people who can start new projects, new initiatives, restructure how universities are working. Yeah.
Okay, awesome. And I guess you mentioned that who can apply? Everybody or?
Yeah, you can go to webpage innovationeducation.lv, I think. And so universities can nominate their participants. Mm. That's one group. We're also working with people from government. So government agencies can nominate their participants and also companies, because we want to kind of change the tradition that, you know, universities, it's only universities and always they're working in their own silos. We want to create an environment where universities, government, and companies work together. So also companies can nominate their high-level managers to apply for the program.
As well. So I know this is not the only thing you've done in RBS, because I think you were the first interaction I had when I was trying to apply as a bachelor student. So could you tell us also about, let's say, your history with RBS? Like,
well, I know something we have like 1 hour, so I don't know. It's a very long story. But I have been with RBS in one role or another for a very long time, maybe like 11 years already, because I'm BBA 1. Yeah. So I studied in RBS's BBA program as the first intake, and now it's BBA 11, so 11 years. I also studied in the MBA program. And afterwards, I started my career, after bachelor's program, I started my career in marketing. I worked for several years. It was great experience, but I somehow always knew that I want to work in education. But my idea was that education will be, you know, like kind of my second career. When I'm 50 years old, I will go to education, and then, yeah, it will be my second career. But somehow, 15, talked with...
You said 15 years
50,
old.
50.
Oh, okay.
50. Yeah. You know, like second career when you're kind of done with corporate world and everything. But talked with Claudio one day, told him about this idea, and then I came back to education when I was 25. So 25 years earlier than I initially planned. And then, yes, I worked with bachelor programs, mostly with that before going to the US. Yeah, with all the administration of programs, student life cycle management, talked with the students who were just thinking of applying to RBS as yourself. So done a lot of things. I also did some things with the Alumni Association. So yeah, RBS, I've been around.
Yeah, and you did a good job. So I've heard only good reviews about you.
Thank you. It's always good to hear. Yeah. See, asking for compliments. I'm doing
exactly,
it myself.
Exactly, strong side. And also, there's the networking dinner coming up.
Yeah.
Of your business school. And I heard you're one of the founders of it.
Yeah.
One of the founding teams.
Yeah, I'm very proud about that. And actually, I'm very proud that it's still happening. And that I see from the pictures that Student Union is posting and how just the vibe around it is that it's so much better now. And you know, like that's the best thing that you can see as someone who started something, that it has grown and it has gotten better. And yes, I was in the first student union. I was the head of culture division. So together with a team, we organized the first networking dinner and it was a huge success. Everyone loved it, but it was very simple, the first one, in like a rustic restaurant and not very fancy at all. But afterwards, then we understood that it's a good idea to maybe make it a little bit more businessy, but the concept has stayed, that it's the business people together with students and they network. And they share some common interests and just have a nice chat and so very happy to see that it's still around.
I'm one of the organizers of the event, and we actually, so it's amazing to hear that it started from the BBA first, let's say the batch, because it's grown so much. We have so much footprints that we can, let's say, guide ourselves on. So we have something to that's left for us, and you can like build on that. And it's going to be really special this year as well.
I have applied. I'm going to
awesome.
Be there.
Okay.
And
talking like into the, let's say, actually first also a little bit about you more, because I know that for most people, like you can tell what kind of person they are from the lessons that they've learned. And what has been a, let's say, a learning lesson in your life? I guess, like, for example, you thought you're going to be in education by the age of 50, turns out 25. What has been some, let's say, milestones in your life, like life-changing moments that like changed your perspective on life, or some, let's say, challenges that you learned upon? Any those kind of moments that come to mind?
I think one thing that really changed my perspective of how I see work and how I want to create my life actually, and what role I see of like job and work in my life, was the first job that I got after university. I studied for 1 year in university at Buffalo. I did the RBS double degree program. So I came back, I was so inspired, so happy, really like ready to start my career. And I wanted to work for a startup. I thought that that's the environment for me. I'm very proactive. I always have new ideas, so startups will be perfect. So I applied, got the job in a small startup. Will not mention any names, but it really wasn't a good experience. Firstly, the values didn't match at all. My ethical compass was somewhere else. I thought that it wasn't really what I signed up for, so to say. Also, I was so bored. I just, like I was at that point when I was kind of watching at the clock and waiting when I can go home. And I remember myself thinking, oh my God, like what changed? I was so happy, always wanting to do things. And kind of my conclusion was probably that's the adult life. Like this is how it's gonna be. I was so happy in school, but now, okay, like you just have to work. And I don't think I even was very good at that job. But then I just realized that, okay, probably that's not how everyone feels. Change jobs, and really, like, you don't have to be unhappy in your job. I learned that I really have to trust my gut feeling, and I really have to, pursue things that I believe in. Because I think the biggest problem with that experience was that I worked for a company that I didn't believe in it. Therefore, I didn't really like the job. So I wasn't there for a long time, but definitely changed my perspective on things. It made me value organizations which do meaningful things, like, schools and education. I understood that what I do professionally plays like big part in my life, and I like that. And I want to do things that matter for me. So, yeah.
That's actually, I'm in a situation myself where I'm also like leaning towards a startup environment, because I guess, like, not I guess, I want to be in a dynamic environment. And you said you didn't find that. Could that be, let's say, that specific case that you had, or there's also like did you find what you were looking for initially in the startups in the corporate world or in the education industry? And
Yeah, I think definitely that was a specific case. So no one should be scared of working in startups. That's my experience. In no way I think it reflects the startup industry as such. It was just my experience, and maybe why I even mentioned that it was startup, because sometimes you don't have so much information about the company where you're going if it's really small, so you don't really know what you're signing up for. So that was my case. But yes, I ended up really finding what I was looking for. Afterwards, I worked actually in another university, then more in marketing, fast-moving consumer goods, and now in RBS. And all of these roles have put me in position where I can do very active things, work with people a lot, implement my ideas. So for sure, I think I found places where I can do that and where I can work on my strengths. But yeah, my suggestion is like not to settle for things that you really don't like, because like why? Life is so short.
awesome. And talking about that, so you recently came back from MIT. You wrote your research paper.
I still have to finish it, but yes.
That's finished. Okay. You did the majority of the work there. And having experienced MIT, what were the, let's say the main differences that you saw in it, how the education is done in MIT and how it's done, let's say, in Latvia? You can generalize it, like in most universities.
Yeah, I think I can share a little bit about my MIT experience. The comparison can be complicated because most of my experience, experience of education in Latvia comes from RBS, which is also very specific, like, you know, and probably all the listeners know, small, very American style. So maybe that's not the best example also. But obviously, I'm aware of the situation elsewhere as well. But just sharing a little bit more about MIT, that was definitely a fantastic experience, thanks to Baltic American Freedom Foundation. So everyone should check that out. That's a great opportunity how to go to the US and really move closer to your dreams a little bit. But MIT is a fantastic institution. It's one of the best universities in the world. And it is very special because it attracts, you know, the best people from everywhere. I say that, okay, MIT is in the US, but it's like a small world in its own. You can meet people from everywhere there. So that's, I think, the first thing. It's super international. So I think in Latvia, we're not there yet, that we have some international students, some international faculty, but MIT and generally universities in the US, they are very international. And I see so much value in it. And I really hope that we can internationalize education in Latvia a little bit more, because you learn so much from just being in that environment, and people have different perspectives, and obviously everyone is very smart and they, you know, also know their field very well, but just the different life perspectives, so cool. MIT is also very, very research oriented, as some universities in Latvia also are, but MIT has a lot of funding, a lot of money, so they can do really you know, world-class research, type of research that moves fields, you know, in different directions. So that was just a fantastic opportunity to be there and meet those people who, their job is to think how they can change the world. It's crazy. Like, it's really cool to see how they think, what their mindset is, and just to be in that environment. And I had an opportunity to take one course in MBA, in Sloan Business School with the MBA students. And it was just very interesting to see how the lecturer creates the discussions, how they challenge students. And I think they're so used to thinking about these super big questions that they also bring this attitude to the classroom. And it's really cool to experience that. Those are two big things. I can go on and on, but maybe, yeah.
So as a person who's never been to MIT, by the time you've like been there, probably the average students that you met, they kind of seem like self-evident. So yeah, MIT students are like this, right? But how would you describe like MIT students in general? Like, yeah, what are they like? Does it really... When they open their mouths, let's say, are you in the first minute convinced that, I mean, yeah, they're supposed to be here. Like, it makes sense. Was it like that?
Yeah, I think so. Well, also, it's a big school. Yeah. So they have business students, they have engineering students, they have chemistry students, they have political science students. So I think that's also a big misconception that people in MIT, they only study like things that are related to technology, like computer science and engineering. That's not true. They have excellent political science program, for example. But people are very smart, but people are also very humble. And I really liked that atmosphere in MIT, that everyone is very open. You can reach out to a professor, like I did sometimes, just found a person who I thought was interesting and I wanted to meet for a chat. Wrote them an email that I'm here for 1 year doing this and that. Would you be open to meet with me and just discuss my ideas? And in most of the cases, they said yes. So I think that's super special in MIT, that everyone is so open and very willing to just discuss things with you. And this environment, for me, it's very inspiring that people, you know, they could be very arrogant, you know, we're at MIT, we don't have to, you know, you have to earn over time, but they're so willing to talk with you. And I think that was very special. And the environment in MIT is very nerdy, and I love it. Like, people don't really dress up. They're always in their hoodies, talking about Star Wars or something, and then doing their little experiments somewhere. Very creative, but nothing, you know, like artsy creative type, but just like people are exploring. They're there to, you know, come up with new ideas, learn. It's very immersive. Yeah. You're there to explore yourself, science. Yeah, I think that's really cool.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was.
You said about the professors, they're really open. What are their, I don't know how much experience you had with actually like being lecturers, and but what are the teaching methods that you've noticed there that they use?
Yeah, so I can just speak about not big experience that I had in this MBA class, which was, it's also MBA class, so we have to take that into account, that most MBA classes are very discussion based. So it was really, the professor was asking good questions and the students were talking. Yeah. So you had to read a lot beforehand, and then you spend the classroom just discussing. I also know from just my colleagues who were talking about how the classes are conducted that it's very practical. You know, for engineering students, they do a lot of experiments they learn a formula, but then to understand it really, they do an experiment that proves it. They do a lot of practical work. So I think it's practical, but also students really, really have to do a lot. And that was interesting. Yeah.
Okay. That sums it up. And I assume you had a lot of interactions with the administration as well.
Yeah.
At MIT. How do you, like, what differences did you see in their, let's say, daily life while working there as compared to Latvia? So maybe you said students, especially at MIT, they're different approach, a different environment. How did those factors change? What did it change? Maybe there's some regulations that come into play. Mm. Like, this is a pretty, let's say, Fugazi kind of area for me.
Yeah,
I can't really imagine what it's like there.
Yeah.
But could you elaborate on that? Like, take it however you want.
Differences. Okay, I will try that. So I had the experience in one of the MIT centers specifically. It's called JVL, World Education Lab. So I can talk about that. And that's part of open learning, which is a division of MIT. Yeah. And then there are other divisions. But I think one big difference is also that it's very decentralized. So a lot of, like, we would call it like fakultātes in Latvian, but like schools in English, like School of Management or School of Engineering, they have their own agenda in a way, and they're in control of things. Mm-hmm. So that's actually, when we look from administrative perspective, that's quite a big difference from Latvia. That would be one thing.
You said Dekapent, it was decentralized over there, right?
Yeah.
Could it just be the case because it's such a big school?
Actually, MIT is not that big. MIT has, I think, 11,000 students, which is less than Riga Technical University. They have a lot of researchers. Harvard is big. Harvard has 30,000 students, but MIT is not that big. So that's always surprising because people assume that it's really like big school number wise because it has such a big impact and the name is so loud, so to say. But no, it's not that big. It's mostly just how they do things. Mm-hmm. They give a lot of, you know, empowerment and ownership for the people who run their specific divisions. So that would be one thing. But also one thing that I want to mention, and that goes through, you know, administration, but generally researchers, everyone who works there, just the idea that you feel everywhere is that you need to take time to think, because that gives you opportunity to do big things, because generally that was like a really, I think, cool experience that I had when I arrived in the, like to MIT. It was still a little bit of like COVID kind of, it wasn't really COVID, but there were still some COVID regulations and not a lot of people were coming to the office. But I was always there because I was there for 1 year and I really wanted to network. And I thought, like, if one person comes to office, I will have an opportunity to talk with him or her and I will build that connection. So I will be in the office. And one day the boss of Open Learning, he was there and I was there. So that gave me a really good opportunity. But of course, I was like a little bit shy to talk with him. Maybe he's super busy. And then he just told me, okay, come walk with me. I'll show you some cool places around MIT. He just had his, I don't know, thinking time or something like that. And we walked around the campus and he showed me some cool places where like really big discoveries were made. And he summarized it all with an idea that you should only do things that can, you know, move the needle, that can make a difference. If you don't at least have this idea that this project of yours can make a difference, you're wasting your time. And I think that's so powerful, to just focus on things that can make a difference, that can make some change, that can be something new and meaningful. And I don't think we always have that. And that's a great, great atmosphere that they have there, that they have built this in. So many things that they do, that you only do things that make a difference and that matter.
Inspiring.
Yeah.
Yeah. You said that it's like the epicenter of innovation. You could say it in a sense, they have really this advanced research. But so since they're the innovators of technology, I imagine there's also a lot of technology that's being, let's say, replaced constantly within the internal structure. And I imagine you have to be a top performer just to be a secretary, just to be, I don't know, reception lady, because you also might need to constantly change technology. Is it that way? Like, because I guess you can call it like insider training in a sense, because since they're the people that invent it, they can use it first.
Mm.
And what's that like? Do they constantly adapt to new technologies in the administration part, maybe in the faculty part as well?
Mm. Actually, no, I didn't experience that. I can't say that. It's not the case in any of the divisions, but actually the organization itself, it's pretty stable because, well, that's my interpretation. Yeah. No one told me that at MIT, but that's how I see it, that you need to have some stability to feel free to experiment. You know, like something needs to be, you know, like the basis. Something needs to be certain for you to feel free to, you know, come up with stuff and... No, I would say that the internal structure was there. Of course, there were some changes, but as in any organization. So, I think a lot of experimentation actually happens in labs, in classrooms, and the job of the university administration is to provide the environment where people feel free to do that. And if it's chaotic, then probably people will be concerned about, you know, how to manage their work and their life instead of, you know, focusing on creating something new. So I think that stability element is also very important in environments that are created for innovation, that there needs to be stability, some sort of stability to innovate.
So you don't always have to learn how to use the systems, but also can use them. Okay. And the way you're like explaining all of this, that they have this like internal environment, like everybody seems to have these like different mindset than what the rest of the world thinks. Is it always like that? Is like your everyday life something similar to the movies while you were there? Or is it like some, I don't know. I don't know how to explain this, like literally, because how you explain this to me, it sounds like every day was a movie to you, in a sense that everybody was interesting there. Everybody has their own, let's say, worldview. They had their own interests, their own hobbies. Was it that way? Or is it just...
Yes and no. It was like that at the end of my time there. But being very honest, it takes time to build these connections. Because you go there and, well, you're there. But then so what? Like, you have to get to know people. You have to earn some trust so they would introduce you to other people. You have to, you know, at least understand a little bit the environment and what's going on to start reaching out to people. So the beginning was very, I just had to do a lot of networking, a lot of being out of my comfort zone, because obviously I was also very aware of the fact that, you know, like, okay, I'm at MIT, so I have to think of what I'm saying and how I'm presenting myself. And the beginning wasn't that beautiful and pretty, because I just had to get into that environment. But once you're there, the conversations really are fantastic. And you just, I was learning so much each time when I had this, just a meeting with someone. And yeah, once you create it for yourself, then it can be amazing.
But saying you have to get in the environment, you mean you had to, let's say, befriend somebody, or was it just to make yourself feel comfortable first and get familiar?
It's just how networking works, you know? It's like, you come to MIT, okay, you're like allowed to be there, essentially, because I was there in like a very specific program that I could do research, so I had my research advisors, but it's a very specific thing that you have to do. And research can also be very isolating, actually, that especially in social sciences, you have to read, and you have to write. Okay, you have to talk to some people in between. And then how do you go about it? How do you meet other people? So it's just a lot of going to events, a lot of, you know, reaching out to people who you find interesting, just building a network. So once you have that network, you know one people, they suggest you someone else, and that's just how it goes. But things take time. But once you have this network, it's really cool.
And talking about challenges that you experienced there, this is some more difficult to answer questions. So you said like the good side of it, but I'm now asking maybe about the US education in general, if you can talk about that, and also Latin education. What do you think are the current challenges that are happening right now that experiencing, trying to, let's say, find problems and answers to?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I think educators everywhere are thinking about it. And I think definitely the role of education was changing already, but COVID just escalated the change. And now, like, we have to ask ourselves, people who work in universities have to ask ourselves every day, what is our role? Because also information is available freely everywhere. You can Google, you can read. Providing information, okay, sometimes it's valuable because you can emphasize, you can really point out what's important, but that's not the main role anymore. So your universities really have to redefine their role, what they give for students. Are we more focused on teaching skills than giving knowledge? Or how do we find balance between skills and knowledge? How do we create environment that really supports this networking, that allows people to build connections? How do we make sure that if people come here to the university and they are physically here, not on Zoom or some other system, how do we make this experience really worthwhile their time? Because, okay, if we look at Latvia, but still people from everywhere come to Riga to study. Well, there are other options as well, but a lot of people still move from their home, even if they go to Jelgava or Ventspils or wherever. So how do we make this move worthwhile? And in the US, it's even a bigger question because it's a big country and people come from everywhere. And do they come just for the information or it's actually for the experience? So the role of universities, it's really a question. A big question that's definitely big also in Latvia, but even bigger in the US, it's funding. Because as you might know, education in the US is crazy expensive. I think, in many schools, no one really pays this super huge amount. But I think 1 year in Harvard costs like $80,000 just tuition, not counting, you know, all the expenses that you have for living. In most cases, people have some sort of scholarships, but still that's the base sum. And even if it costs like $30,000 a year in some like state universities, it's still a lot of money. So a lot of thinking goes into how to redesign that system so it's more socially equal. Because if it's that expensive, is it really equal? Can you really provide these opportunities for people who maybe can't just afford that? And well, we could go into a lot of discussions about, you know, just academic merit and everything, but that is also very much connected with your socioeconomic status. So funding, it's also a big question in Latvia, although for us it's from a little bit different perspective, but definitely higher education is underfunded, so also money questions. It's very different in the US and Latvia, but in both countries it's a big topic. And then one more thing that I want to point out that I think is more developed in the US, and we have to think about it in Latvia, but it's questioned in both countries and it's challenging, well, everywhere in the world. It's, okay, we are redesigning the role of university as an educator, but also we have to think what other roles university has to play, meaning what is the student support that we need to provide so that students can really take the most out of it. Because, you know, some years ago, not that long ago, you come to the university, if you have some problems, well, that's your problem. You can't study good enough. But we have to think what learning support, maybe well-being support universities have to provide for students to really develop not only academically, but really as human beings. And we have to take into account all the things that are happening in the world. So how we can support students in the best way so they are successful academically, but they are also successful as people, that they don't burn out, that they don't finish university with huge mental health problems. These are important topics. How do we support them in getting their first job without huge stress? It's kind of additional services, but they are so important. And we have to think more what they are and how we implement them in the way that is the best for students.
You mentioned that Latvia should strive towards being a more international, say, have the same environment that you saw at MIT, that could be really helpful. What do you think should be, how to make that happen, I guess is my question. Like, what's your maybe, let's say, theory of the ideals that should be reached to actually make Latvia attractive enough to become such an environment? Yeah. What should happen?
Yeah, I think if I would know the answer, I would be sitting somewhere else right now. But no, obviously, I have some ideas. And also, before I start answering, I wanted to point out because, you know, MIT is one of the best in the world. Mm. But there are also other universities that are not as good, which also have this international environment. So just a first point that internationality, it's not only for, you know, the best university in the world. Others can have it as well. And the first thing is definitely content in English. I think it's that easy. If we go through study programs in Latvia, the amount of programs in English is quite limited, actually. We don't have so many. So that would be the first thing, to create those programs. But to have programs in English, we need to have professors, lecturers, faculty members who can teach in English. So we need to make sure that people who are doing their PhDs, they can speak in English, they can write in English. So that would be the first thing. Thinking about programs that are attractive for people from other countries, definitely as well. Generally, I think that Riga as a destination for students, it's quite good. It's not a big city, but still it offers a lot of things. And maybe making this information just, you know, more clear, more available. And I think a lot of universities in Latvia, they are already starting these efforts and they are in some cases very successful. But we are in the beginning of this road and we just have to, you know, continue working and create more opportunities for people to study in English. Hmm.
And about the importance of this, like why it's even important to, let's say, focus that much on universities. You said that challenge is thinking about the role that universities have, let's say, in students' lives, but what role does universities have in society in general?
It's an excellent question. Yeah, universities play a huge role in the development of society. Research, you know, the new ideas, they come from universities. Okay, and recently also some big companies, they are focusing on research, and obviously they are also creating some new ideas and innovations, but a lot of innovations come from universities. And the beauty of innovations and new ideas in universities is that in companies, often you have to be very focused, and you know there are KPIs, you have to come up with a specific thing in specific time frame. So sometimes it's just the most efficient thing. But it's like the beauty, but also sometimes it has disadvantages, that universities are more open, and professors have, and scientists, they have the freedom to, you know, just think and come up with crazy ideas. And how is it called? It's like the beauty of, I forgot the term, but the idea is that there is beauty in just learning and thinking about random things, because that's how you really come up with really new ideas. So that's the first thing. Universities play a huge role in knowledge creation, in groundbreaking knowledge, and also in something more simple. But that's the role of universities, to create knowledge. Definitely the development of human capital, knowledge, skills, a lot of that comes from universities in the bachelor programs and master programs and PhD programs, but also in executive education and lifelong education. And universities should do more in that. Universities should be a place, in my opinion, where people in any age can come back and learn something new. But also universities, they are a very important role. They play a very important role in the ecosystem. And I think they're going back to the MIT example. It's a wonderful example of how university can change like the whole area. When MIT started, it was like a really small thing. And then it was growing. And actually the area where MIT is now, it was named in, I think, 2018, the most innovative square mile in the world, because it's MIT and also a lot of pharmaceutical companies. And then they have the Cambridge Innovation Center, Google there. So a lot of big company offices and also MIT, and it's all like meshed together. And that part of city, it was actually like kind of dangerous even when they moved there. And now it's like the coolest place ever. So universities can do that. Universities have young people, which is the most important thing in the world. They are people who are the future, and universities are educating them. So obviously it should be a great place for companies where to be. And universities have to be open enough. And also companies have to know how to work with universities to create this synergy. Why Google is in the middle of MIT's campus? Probably because they're working together. Probably because really smart students are there, and it's very easy for them to get them in, you know, like hire them. So creating these synergies and really spreading the new knowledge into the ecosystem where the university is at, I feel like that's the role of university. And I think universities need to be these really inspiring, cool places where people come up with new things, they learn, they are really immersed in the experience, and the knowledge is not contained in the university, but it spreads out. And we need to make sure we create these systems where the knowledge can spread out to companies, to government, to just the society.
Awesome. I guess the entire answer that you just gave, that's the most important quote of the whole episode that we have today. So yeah, that was great. And since we're running out of time, I have the last question for you. What was your most, let's say, favorite, funniest, best moment in your studies at RBS? Study here.
Oh, that's such a good question. I can think of so many. I don't know, but what I can say is that my best friends are from RBS, and we most of them were part of Student Union, and I have so many good memories of just, you know, sitting here super late when the guards are already telling us that you have to go home. We don't want to go home. We're kind of doing homework, kind of organizing an event, kind of just, you know, bonding and being there together, and just this whole environment of, you know, creating things together and learning. I think that the whole vibe, how I remember my bachelor studies, it's a really, really good memory. And I think it's just a really cool thing that we are still friends. Yeah, 11 years later.
I think the environment hasn't changed one bit. I mean, still there's students that stay until the guards want to go home. They decide when you leave. And yeah, it's amazing. Still, the community is still there.
That's so good to hear. You know, those are things that you don't see when you're not there, and you don't feel when you're not part of that situation. But it's just really nice to see that you can totally relate to what I'm saying, you know, 11 years later. That's so cool.
So that.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Thank you, everybody, for watching. And this was Paul Eliksna. And see you in the next episode in 2 weeks. Until then, bye.
Bye.